I'd like to use a few minutes now to talk about specifically two events which are taking place in Europe, and I have virtually read nothing about it here in the United States, at least the first event I'm going to talk about right now, but the second one we have heard something. They are related, as I will show you. Let me just ask you for a show of hands. How many of you have heard, based on the American media, if you have computers and look at the internet, let's say, and find articles in England or Germany, just the American media, how many of you have heard about the widening scandal of the sex abuse situation in Germany pertaining to the Catholic Church? One and a half. Not too many. Well, I haven't seen anything, which is interesting because it is a tremendous, tremendous problem which can be paralleled with the scandal which we had several years ago in the United States and subsequent to that in Ireland. Now, I'd like to take a few minutes to read to you what is happening. And the fact that even Fox doesn't talk about it is not surprising to me, because Mr. Hannity is Catholic. Mr. O'Reilly is Catholic. We have Mrs. Pelosi, who is Catholic. We have Mr. Biden, who is Catholic. There are others who are Catholic. So this is not something which they would like to talk about. But Germany is talking about it after a long time of secrecy. Here's an article by Der Spiegel Online, dated February 8th. And I just read a few portions of this. All of this is, of course, in our update, and you can read it in more detail. But just some excerpts. The Catholic Church in Germany has been shaken in recent days by revelations of a series of sexual abuse cases. Close to 100 priests and members of the laity have been suspected of abuse in recent years. For decades, German bishops tried to look the other way when their pastors engaged in sexual abuse, as well as to downplay the problem by characterizing it as isolated incidents. The scandal is just beginning, and yet it has already made a deep impression on parents who expect Catholic schools to provide their children with moral guidance, on the victims who are now confronting their dark past after living with it half their lives, and on the faithful who now regard their church with dismay. Their shock stems not only from the fact that there are pedophiles in the church, as they are always in society. It also comes from the fact that the church systematically protected the perpetrators and ignored the victims, and that it repressed and covered up sexual abuse in its own ranks for decades, and in doing so enabled pedophile priests to leave behind a trail of emotional devastation throughout Germany. The clerics are still a long way from any sort of true self-criticism or far-reaching analysis, because it would require them to examine the church's repressed sexual morality that is dictated from above. It would require an honest discussion about celibacy and its consequences. In a church that is having trouble attracting men to the priesthood, particularly as a result of the ban on marriage, the number of good candidates has become so small that too many inappropriate candidates get admitted. Later on, the article says, whenever rumors surfaced in Catholic schools, parishes, youth groups, and children's homes, or victims overcame their shame and reported the abuse, the church would downplay the cases, characterizing them as isolated, regrettable exceptions, or the misconduct of an errant priest. This was a position taken by the Vatican and by German bishops, who were unwilling to accept that the problem could lie in the system itself. Later on, it says, the U.S. bishops concluded that there were credible accusations against around 5,000 priests involving the abuse of about 12,000 children since 1950. A series of sex scandals also shook Ireland, where a commission concluded that about 35,000 children were beaten and abused in Catholic children's homes and orphanages between 1914 and 2000. Later on, the article goes on to say, celibacy, which has only been a general requirement since 1139, is seen as a main reason for the repressed accumulation of sexual urges, which sometimes erupts in brutal ways within the clergy. According to a U.S. survey, two-thirds of priests adhere to their vows of chastity while the rest have sex in all shapes and forms, heterosexual, bisexual, homosexual, monogamous, promiscuous. So, where is this idea from enforced celibacy coming from? We just read it was not there in the early New Testament church. Now, we do have a Q&A on this, and I like to just briefly read to you from one excerpt which explains where it's coming from. Because first of all, the Bible doesn't say that at all. We quote in this Q&A Proverbs 18, verse 22, which says, "He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord." It also says at the very beginning of the Bible, "It is not good that a man is alone. I will create a helper for him to be with him, to help him." So, the concept of this enforced celibacy is not coming out of the Bible. According to James Hastings in his Encyclopedia of Religion and Ethics, there's where it's coming from. Two influences contributed especially to the rise of this enforced celibacy. To the Gnostic, marriage was from Satan. Marriage was pronounced to be corruption and fornication. To these we must add the influence of the religion of Isis and the worship of Mithra, both of which were widespread throughout the Roman Empire. Catholic Christians were not to be outdone by heretics and heathens in self-renunciation. The outcome was inevitable. The highest type of Christian was the celibate. Christian teachers praised virginity, and marriage came to be in their eyes only a secondary good for those who were unable to preserve continence. Ultimately, superiority of virginity or celibacy to the marital state had become Catholic Church doctrine. And then people who didn't agree with this were actually excommunicated and declared anathema from Christ. Now, the Protestants, according to this article, vigorously denounced clerical celibacy. Luther, as early as 1520, advocated allowing pastors their freedom in the matter, and denounced compulsory celibacy as the work of the devil. He said that the celibacy of the clergy was a popish innovation against the eternal word of God. Calvin denounced the vile celibacy of the priests and the interdiction of marriage to priests as contrary to the word of God and to all justice. Now, the reason I bring this up, apart from the abominable situation going on over there in Germany, and the fact that the Catholic Church is still not coming to terms with this problem, which is a widespread problem, is the fact that based on history and based on prophecy, we can expect that the Catholic Church will become pretty soon very strong in responding to the critics. Historically, this has always happened, that when the church was criticized for something, they would turn around and persecute the critics. I pointed this out already in this update from this last week, and pointing out here, let me just read to you what I said. The growing criticism of outraged parents and victims, as well as society as a whole, could backfire. The Catholic Church, being pushed more and more into a corner due to appropriate criticism, might respond by attacking its critics in order to solidify the priesthood and the faithful within its own ranks. Historically, the Roman Church has had its terrible episodes of incredible, abominable crimes perpetrated by popes and priests, which were oftentimes accompanied by violent attacks on their critics. After I wrote that, I found an article, which I wasn't even aware of, that the former spokesman of Radio Vatican blasted those who were criticizing those Jesuits who were involved in this scandal as conducting a witch hunt on them like it was conducted on the Jews in Nazi Germany. Now, you figure this. We will see the Catholic Church becoming more and more hostile towards those who dare to criticize them. Now, the Bible prophesies that in the end times, Germany will rise again, and it will be a corporation, a confederation, you might say, between state and church. And it will be a revival of the ancient Roman Empire the quote-unquote Holy Roman Empire, as it is called, which will then do what they have always done in the past. They will resort to violent means to suppress anyone who is not in agreement with their cause. And the Bible does talk about a martyrdom, which is going to occur on true Christians when this is going to happen. Now, in this regard, you might have heard about big discussions going on right now regarding the future of the euro. And I found some articles on that. And in fact, Mr. Sage actually called me the other day and alerted me to that, because it has all to do with the Greek situation, with Greece. But let me just read to you a few excerpts from what's being said, and then let me assure you what's not going to happen. First of all, here's an article by Mail Online, a British paper, saying, the European single currency is facing an inevitable breakup, a leading French bank claimed yesterday. The stark warning came as the euro slipped further on the currency markets and dire growth figures raised the prospect of a double-dip recession in the embattled zone. Eurozone we're talking about. David Cameron, now that's the guy who is running for leadership over there in Britain, told the Tories Scottish Conference, if I am elected, for as long as I am Prime Minister, the United Kingdom will never join the euro. And he might be very well correct. They may not join the euro. Neither might Sweden. But the interesting thing is the fact that Britain is now rejoicing over the euro debacle because they are not part of it, is not true to reality. The Los Angeles Times wrote today, February 13, it's not hard to find some smug smiles in Britain these days as the rest of Europe grapples with a debt crisis that has cast doubt on the future of the euro. This island nation has fiercely resisted adoption of the single regional currency and has clung to the pound as a symbol of tradition and independence. But Britain is in no position to sit back and relax, not when its own economy is still in such shaky condition, its credit rating in danger of an embarrassing downgrade, and its government sinking deeper into debt. Like many other nations, including the United States, Britain went on a spending spree to stimulate demand during the recession's darkest days. And as elsewhere, that has compounded a budget deficit now at a level not seen since World War II. So Britain is in very, very bad conditions. But coming back to the euro situation, I'd like to read to you from an article which was published by Der Spiegel, dated February 12th, that's yesterday, an interview with European Central Bank chief economist Jürgen Stark, who has this to say. There were many skeptics at the beginning of the currency union. Since then, the euro has experienced 11 successful years. But all market players and currencies have been put to the same test since the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. That, by the way, happened on the other side of the Atlantic and led to the tsunami that then hit Europe. So he's saying, don't blame the euro, don't blame the eurozone. If you want to blame anybody, blame the United States, because they caused it all. He goes on to say, we began with 11 countries and we have 16 today. The eurozone was never a closed affair. The goal is and must continue to be that all 27 EU countries have the same currency in the end. But that's not what's going to happen. He goes on to say, Great Britain has a budget deficit of the same magnitude as Greece. The US budget deficit is also more than 10% of the GDP. All advanced economies are currently having problems. In fact, it's astonishing to see where most of the criticism of the euro is coming from at the moment, pointing at Britain and, of course, the United States. Much of what they are printing reads as if they were trying to deflect attention away from problems in their own backyards. And then he goes on to say, yes, everyone is a sinner at the moment, but we also happen to be dealing with the consequences of the worst recession in 80 years. Now, I'm bringing this up because you will undoubtedly hear some more and more comments, and you will read articles about the euro's history, and that's all going to be a done deal. Don't believe it. I mean, I would be wrong as I could wrong possibly be. if I would see the euro disappear. I said from the outset, when the euro was instituted 11 or so years ago, that this is going to make Europe an extremely powerful bloc. The euro is here to stay. Now, if I'm wrong, I am really wrong. I don't believe it. I do believe, and the Bible clearly shows us, that Europe is becoming a very powerful economic entity. So much so that it will be much more powerful than the United States of America, which we are seeing is going downhill. The euro is one instrument of bringing Europe together, and it has been already done tremendous effect in this regard. Now, the European army, as I pointed out last time, is going to be another vehicle which is going to soon be implemented. Europe is going to be the country which we have to all deal with. It's going to be a confederation between church and state. It's not good news. I mean, I'm not saying this here because I come from Germany and feel this is great. This is not great at all, but it's something which the Bible is prophesying. It's going to happen. And this powerful bloc will be used by God to punish the United States of America and Great Britain and Canada and other modern Israelite nations for their sins. Not that because Europe is better, because God says, well, they're even less righteous than the Israelites, but God expects more from the modern nations of Israel, and is very disappointed by the way they have turned their back on him. So they are going to be punished, and it's going to be through Europe, and we will see this happening, and it's going to happen sooner than many think. Yes, there are some problems right now, and of course Satan is always very anxious to cast doubt on God's prophecies, but God knows what he's doing. And ultimately, Satan is going to use a very powerful military leader, the beast, as he is called in the book of Revelation. He is going to be the one, but of course God is allowing it, to bring this man into power. And when that happens, combined with the false prophets, these are the two things we really should be watching for, the two people, when they manifest themselves on the world scene, we know that the end of the United States of America, as we know it, is going to be very near.